The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Man, I tell you what, I'll take 114 degrees any day over this cool summer day. I'm not down with this. I want some heat in the summertime. I don't like these clouds. What's going on here? It's like everything's turned upside down. Okay, I'm glad you're with us this afternoon. As you just heard in Aaron's newscast, Richard Sherman has a court appearance that he could do in person or just send an attorney. 2:30 this afternoon, which ties right in with today's top story.
The Big Lead, top story.
And I'm going to talk about this in depth at 12:30 this afternoon. But a lot of people were asking, why'd you play that 911 call? We were the first to obtain the wife's 911 call yesterday. And there are a lot of reasons. I'll go in depth at 12:30. But there are so many issues going on here. And one is, you know, these athletes who are telling us how we need to think, how we should live our lives. They are mandating that pro sports leagues reflect a far leftist mentality. And they have the little slogans that they paint on the football field and the basketball court and all of that because they're going to tell us how we should think and feel about the world. But, you know, with this Richard Sherman incident yesterday, it illustrates that there are so many systemic problems within the group of people who are telling us how we should live our lives and how we should think. And, you know, you look at the Seahawks Legion of Boom, the four defensive backs, the Richard Sherman incident yesterday. A couple of years ago, Earl Thomas was with a mistress, and he was chased around a vehicle by his wife, who had a gun, as she had tracked his location. Brandon Browner, he's serving 8 years in prison for attempted murder and two counts of child cruelty. Before they tell us how we should live our, and I'll give you lots of other examples. Chad Wheeler, who was a little-known Seattle Seahawk, but he almost killed his girlfriend a few months ago. Michael Bennett, who's a very bright guy. Richard Sherman's a very bright guy. Michael Bennett, who lied about police brutality in Las Vegas. There are some real systemic problems here. And they should clean up their own house before they tell us how we should think and feel about everything. But tremendous controversy, I found out, because we aired that 911 call yesterday. And there was another subject that came out of that 911 call that generated an awful, more than the Richard Sherman involvement, it was the way the call was handled. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, as we were talking about the Richard Sherman story yesterday, we played the 911 call from his wife to police, which is where this whole incident started. And I just got overwhelmed. People stopped focusing on the Richard Sherman part of the story, and they started focusing on the 911 call receiver and thought that this person was very unprofessional. And I don't know anything about that world. I don't know what they're trained to do. I don't know how they're supposed to handle calls. But I know somebody who does know that stuff. John Urquhart, former King County Sheriff. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Sheriff, always good to talk with you, sir.
Thanks, Dory. Glad to be here.
A couple of things. Before I get to the 911 caller, I know that you had a chance to listen to these calls. And just from a police perspective, this was a pretty serious incident, wasn't it?
Well, it was a very serious incident, as it turned out. But, of course, the call receiver, when that first call came in from the wife, she doesn't know that. She doesn't know what's going on, doesn't know how serious it is. And it certainly could have been much more serious. So there's certain information that she has to get, and it's absolutely critical that she gets that information quickly. The problem is what she wants to get and what the person who's calling in this case, Richard Sherman's wife, sometimes those things diverge. And the caller, who was obviously very, very upset, understandably, wants to talk about one thing, and the call receiver wants to get information on something else. And that means that the call receiver has to take control of that situation. Okay. And oftentimes, quite frankly, they come across as rude.
Now, as I understand it, there are two levels of people in the 911 call center. The call receiver, who's the person we hear on this 911 tape, and then the dispatcher. The dispatcher communicates with the police who are being sent out. The call receiver is just there to gather information, put it in the system, send it to the dispatcher who will dispatch the cops. Is that all correct?
That's absolutely correct. They're sitting in fairly close together, but on separate sides of the room, basically. And they communicate back and forth via the computer.
Okay, let me play a couple of these clips for you, because these are the ones that seem to set off my listeners the most.
911, what are you reporting?
I need officers to my house now. My husband is drunk and threatened to kill himself.
Stop. What's the address? Are there any weapons? Stop.
There's no gun. I'm saying there are no weapons, ma'am. There are no weapons.
You need to stop interrupting me so I can get the information I need to get officers expedited.
I need officers here now.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, John, from my listeners is, here's a woman in crisis, and she received no compassion on the other end. What do you say to that?
I think that's probably true. There was no compassion because of the urgent need to get information. And what she was trying to do is just get Richard Sherman's wife to stop, take a breath, and listen, and get that key information out. The key information was, hey, what's your address? Where are you? Because if I don't have your address, I can't help you. And number two, are there any weapons there so she can protect the officers, the deputies that are responding? That's absolutely critical. You really don't have time to stop. And I guess I would call it handholding, as terrible as that sounds. You have to get the information.
No, that does not sound terrible. And, you know, the reason I didn't, you know, I said I understand how this sounds, but I also understand I don't know what that job is. I don't know what they're trained to do. And that's why I wanted to get your insight and expertise on this. Okay, here's one other clip of that call.
Okay, and how much has he had to drink tonight?
Two bottles.
Two bottles of what?
Ma'am.
A vodka and Hennessy.
Okay, hard alcohol.
It's alcohol. He's intoxicated.
Okay, sir. I'm only going to talk to one person, so please put the phone down and talk to
ma'am,
Ashley.
Look, okay, is the sheriff on the way?
Okay, listen, it's over on dispatch, okay? Talking to me is not going to slow anything else down.
She keeps saying, what you tell me is not going to slow help down. But I'm guessing Richard Sherman's wife isn't even hearing this at this point because she's in crisis. I mean, there are just two such divergent mindsets at play right now. One person has to gather info as part of her job. The other person is, like I said earlier, in crisis. And those two don't meld very well together.
That's exactly right. It's very, very difficult. And as we, in the cold light of day, as third parties, we listen to this, and it's sometimes difficult to understand. When I first heard your call, when you called me to get some information, I thought, oh boy, here we go. And then I listened to the call, and I had no problem with that whatsoever because I know what goes on. I've been there. I've been on both sides. So it's a little different viewpoint, I guess.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to get an expert opinion. All right, here's one more.
I cut the gate. We live behind it. It's Richard Sherman. Like, ma'am, this is like a emergency. I need officers here
listen
now.
Listen to me. I'm handling this. You need to stop telling me that.
Okay, but what I'm
not going to slow help down.
Okay, why wouldn't the call receiver, when the wife says, are the police on the way, why wouldn't she just say, yes, they are? I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, I think she probably should have, or that would have certainly helped. She didn't happen to in this situation, but, you know, kind of, oh well, nobody's perfect, a lot going on. And remember, all this information is coming in, and it's not like she's sitting there waiting for the call receiver, sitting there waiting for the call to end. She is typing continuously. She is sending information to the dispatcher, basically simultaneously as she's talking on the phone, and the dispatcher then has already dispatched the deputies to this whatever address she had, even without all the information yet.
Right. And I absolutely understand when the uncle jumped on the call and the call receiver said, I only talk to one person at a time. That would be chaos if that wasn't an absolute policy, because you'd be dealing with that in most calls, I'm guessing.
Sure. And it was already chaos. Let's face it was already chaos. The last thing you need is another person in there chiming in.
So when what's the main message? Having heard this from a trained expert's perspective, what's the main message that my listeners should take away from all of this?
Well, I you know, it doesn't really matter what I'm going to say, because if you're in a crisis situation and you're calling 911, it's hard to do what I'm going to tell you to do. What I'm going to say is take a deep breath, slow down, and just listen to what the call receiver asks you, and give her that give her or him that information. Just slow down. But I understand how difficult it is. Dory, let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
You know, I worked patrol for God knows how many years, a long, long time. And you know how cops complain. And we sit around and we complain. And one of the things we complained about most was the communication center, because we always thought they didn't get what our job was, and we certainly didn't understand it. It went on and on and on. And then I went in as part of my training, and I sat for 8 hours with a call receiver and a dispatcher. And I got to tell you, I walked away from that with a whole new respect for what they do. As far as I'm concerned, if you look at a police department, those two jobs are the toughest jobs day in and day out, much more difficult than what a patrol officer, what a police officer does. It's so difficult because of the calls they get, what they have to deal with on the phone. Remember, they're the first person talking to some, God knows what it could be, a mass shooting or a DV like this. They have a fantastically tough job, and they do a great job of it. And I think this call receiver, both of them, the one that took the uncle's call a little bit later, they did a great job.
You see, I really understand what you're saying, because cops, as you know, as mistreated as they've been around here the last couple of years, cops still do have positive encounters in a lot of days where they talk to people in a friendly way and are appreciated. These call center people, they know when they roll out of bed in the morning, they are for 8 straight hours going to talk to people who are probably in the midst of the worst crisis of their life. And that has to be draining. It has to be a little bit soul sucking. And I certainly was much more inclined to want to extend grace to this person than, you know, what I think most people's visceral reaction was.
They pick up the phone, and they don't know if it's someone calling about an abandoned vehicle or they've walked in on a dead child. They don't know what's going to be on the other end of that call. Exceedingly difficult, and they certainly do the best they can, and I think they do a great job, and I think this particular call receiver did just fine. I have no complaints whatsoever.
All right. That's a great perspective. John Urquhart, former King County Sheriff. John, always appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dory.
Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Oh, and then we get to our governor. Jay Inslee, he has told us that remember last summer, right, as we were going into last summer, remember how Jenny Durkin, when Chaz and Chop started, she declared that it was going to be the summer of love. And now you have Jay Inslee, and he's come up with a name for the summer of 21.
This is the summer of climate change.
Oh, man, I wish we had a song for that. Yeah, maybe we will. But it's the summer of climate change, he tells us, because it was 115 degrees a couple of weeks ago. It's gray and cloudy and a little bit chilly today. Does this mean the crisis is over, Governor? If you're telling us that a couple of days of high heat is climate change, then what does it mean when we have a couple of days of unseasonably cool temperatures? Does that mean the crisis is over? Can it end as quick as it begins in the mind of Jay Inslee? Well, no, but here's the thing. Jay Inslee, he is so nervous about letting go of the absolute power and control that he's had over us because of COVID-19. He declared it an emergency, which was only supposed to last for a couple of weeks. And that is how the governor's emergency powers were designed. In a terrorist attack or an earthquake. It was not designed to give a governor such extra constitutional power and control over our lives for a year and a half. And power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Jay Inslee has had absolute power for the last year and a half. And I think that it has been very corrupting. And so now he's telling us that about the climate change, and all of this is nonsense. We've talked with Cliff Mass about this extensively, about how the heat we've had has nothing to do with climate change. But Jay Inslee tells us,
well, we very are proud of what we've done. We passed two bills this last session that will put a limitation economy-wide on the amount of carbon pollution that goes in the atmosphere. And essentially, there will be some charge for companies to make sure that you comply with your obligation. It's also a good bill because it has a lot of environmental justice built into it. Look, we know who are the first and worst hit by this. It's people in poverty. It's people who have to work outside. And so we embedded environmental justice to bring more equity to this effort.
Environmental justice. Equity. And they said that this is a permanent emergency. His words, a permanent emergency. That is not how governor emergency powers were ever supposed to be. But now Jay Inslee thinks that he can take some extraordinary control over our lives and over the lives of our businesses and over our economy by declaring this a permanent emergency. Well, governor, I am declaring, what's temperature right now? Nicole, do you have the weather on your phone? I want to see what the temperature is right now. I should pull my up here.
Yeah, my computer says 61.
Oh, 61? It's 64 where I am. Governor, I am declaring a permanent it's too cold emergency because it's 61 or 64 degrees outside. And my declaration makes every bit as much sense as yours does. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Heaven knows. My radio show has been involved in more than our share of controversy over the years, including apparently yesterday, which is, of all the controversies, yesterday's was the stupidest one ever. And I'll go through it all with you. Coming up next, right after we check the news, here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as I said before the newscast, apparently my radio show was involved in some controversy yesterday. Very uncharted waters for us. So let me walk you through, because it seemed to generate so much interest, and I think blue checkmark Twitter was talking about us more than ever yesterday. So Nicole, tell everybody, because we were the first to get this 911 audio, and it came from a tip, correct?
Correct. We have lots of tipsters out there. We really appreciate all the tips we get, because most of our stories and stuff come from just little tips that I'm given and we can follow up on, and we really appreciate that. That's what's different about our audience as opposed to other shows and audiences.
Yeah, really, that's why we break so many stories, and because we have a great, great audience. And of course, a 911 call is a matter of public record, and we were on the air when this tip came in, so you and Hannah Scott work to get the call, to clean it up, to bleep it, and to present it on air.
It actually ended up working out. So there was, that dispatch happened, and multiple officers were on that call. So when I inquired about the call and the incident in Maple Valley, they were actually surprised nobody had called yet, because it hadn't hit the news yet. Nobody had reached out asking about it. And so when I did, they were pretty much ready for me. And we had that audio within a half an hour.
Did it ever for one second, because it did not with me, did it ever for one second cross your mind, oh, maybe we shouldn't play this?
No. No, not at all. I mean, it's obviously sad, and we play sad things.
Sure.
We play things like this happen all the time, and none of it is, we're not taking it and celebrating the fact that we have it or celebrating the fact that it happened. We are simply, you know, we're technically journalists, media that are sharing information that is public record.
Right.
And, you know, I've said this a couple of times, but it's not that I think celebrities, athletes are treated fairly all the time. They're not. But I guarantee he expected this, because, I mean, it's a deal with the devil you make when you sign up, and it doesn't make it okay.
Hey, we're not the devil. What do you mean the deal with the devil? We're not the devil.
I just mean the pros and cons of celebrity are obvious, and I'm not okaying them. I didn't make the rules. I'm just saying this is the culture we live in right now. And especially in Richard's case, I think that he was such a player's advocate. He definitely he utilized his relationship with the media. I mean, it ended up a little tense in the end, but for the most part, he utilized the relationship he had with the media. So this is probably, like, this is where that goes. And I hope that he gets the help he needs, because I hope this is as rock bottom as it goes for him.
Of course.
And
yeah.
He gets the help he needs, and he takes the situation and hopefully uses it for good, to help other players who, you know, his career is most likely ending, and he is, you know, the thing that he's done his entire life, he can't do anymore. And I'm sure that is a hard thing to deal with.
Well, in
mentally.
Fact, everybody should read. Jason Whitlock has a column today, and he says that he feels sorry for Richard Sherman, but not necessarily because of, you know, what transpired yesterday. But he says, look, here's a guy who came, and it's a very admirable story. Richard Sherman came from South Central L.A., from one of the worst ghettos in the country, and he gets into Stanford. But as soon as he was identified, when he was 13, 14 years old, as a gifted athlete. And by the way, when he went to Stanford, they didn't project him as an NFL player. He just worked his butt off to accomplish all of that. But then once you're about 14, 15 years old, all of a sudden, everybody starts treating you like a god. And that's why it's so hard for athletes to keep some sense of perspective, because all the college recruiters want you. And then if you're really good in college, then NFL scouts start coming around. And that's what everybody dreams of, is these riches. Richard Sherman, in large part, I mean, because of his talent, of course, but he also was one of the most famous athletes in the country. And this goes back to him using the media to create the persona that made him one of the most marketable, recognizable athletes in the country.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best, or I'm gonna shut it for you real quick.
Okay, so he used that moment after the game against the 49ers to, I don't know how calculated it was, but he used that forevermore.
Oh, there were shirts, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I bought a tank top. So I think that definitely he used the situation, used the media, used the publicity. And along with that, you're going to get, I mean, if there are bad choices in there, whether this is, I mean, I think this is a mental health issue. It's a, you know, if Richard wanted to hurt somebody, he would have really hurt somebody, right?
Right.
He could.
But
that's obviously not his heart. And I think this is a mental health crisis that he's having with, given the career.
Yes.
That
there's already a restraining order against him from earlier this year. We're finding out that. But I want to get to this ridiculous criticism. So we get the 911 call. It doesn't even cross our mind, either Nicole or me, to withhold it from you. We're not the censors, and I also know. But you know, so we played it on the show yesterday, and yeah,
we
promoted that we had it, and we said, look, we got an exclusive. We're breaking this at 2 o'clock, and all of a sudden, all these, and you know, Twitter's the worst place in the world, but everybody starts coming out. All these national sports writers, and you have to understand, there may be few professions more leftist than sports writing. They have to be. If they say anything that counters the very woke message that athletes and now leagues are pushing out there, they'll be denied access. And so sports writers, whether they want to be or not, they have to be far, far, far left. So we start getting all these messages. You're disgusting. Can't believe you're doing this. This is shameful. And the only reason they were upset was because we were the first ones to get it. Obviously, if we were getting these tips, everybody else in the media was. And so, by 11 o'clock, all the TV stations are playing it. Seattle Times quoting from it, ESPN, ABC. By the way, it's kind of sleazebags, ESPN, ABC, TMZ, because they all wrote an audio obtained by ESPN, ABC, and on TMZ. TMZ has obtained now. You all got it from us, but wow. I don't care about that. But my point is, the only reason people were upset at us was because we were the first to get it, because we're really good at our jobs. And if it had been on all the TV stations last night and then we played it on today's show, nobody would have said a peep about it. So of all the things, and we've gotten more than our share of criticism of all the things. And here's my final point. There were people who were going on Twitter and saying, I just listened to the call. You're disgusting for having played it. Now, you're disgusting for having listened to it then. If you don't want to hear it, turn off the radio. You can be your own gatekeeper. We're not your mommy and daddy. We're not your babysitter. We're not your nanny. We're not your censor. This was news, whether you like it or not. It was news because this is one of the most famous athletes in the history to come out of the Seattle area. Of course it's news. And we're not going to censor it. And, you know, other shows might not want to play it. Other media outlets might not want to play it. That's fine. I couldn't care less what they do, how they handle their thing. But you have the control over everything that you take in. If you start to hear 911, what is your call? And if you say, oh, no, I don't want to listen to this, turn it. But don't tell us that we have to withhold it and censor it from everybody else who's listening. It was news. And it's our job to talk about, analyze, provide some perspective on news, which is what we did. And that's why I'm saying there's been some criticism that I think, we might have something here. I've said that. But this was the stupidest bit of criticism. For those of you who are criticizing, stop being such babies. Control your own life. Control your own inputs. Don't tell other people they got to censor something from you. You censor it from yourself. The mentality of helplessness, of childishness of all these people, that hurt me to listen to it. Then don't listen. Idiotic attitudes. See, I didn't call them idiots. I called their attitude. I'm so good about this. Okay, let me take a quick time out here, and then we got lots of other news we have to get to as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
I can see you in the morning when you go to school. Don't forget your book. You know you gotta learn the golden rule. The teacher tells you stop your play and get on with your work. And be like Johnny Too Good. Don't you know he never shirks? He's coming along.
And Johnny Too Good is apparently one of the only ones who never shirks. Got some school news for you today. And I'm going to bring it local in just a minute. But just saw something shocking this morning. In Baltimore, Maryland, 41% of Baltimore high school students, 41% have a grade point average below 1.0. Below a D average. Do you know how hard it is to get a D? It's probably tougher to get a D than it is to get an A. Because to get a D, you do nothing. The schools, they're just trying to push kids through. And if you sign your name at the top of a sheet of paper and then don't put anything on the sheet of paper, you get 30 points for signing your name. They just want to move the kids through. But the fact that 41% in Baltimore are below a 1.0, it just almost with certainty, not quite absolute, but almost, it just guarantees that you're going to be in some level of poverty or need unless you have some family money, because it is that work ethic. And to get less than a 1.0 means a complete total lack of work ethic. And so as sad as that, but I just wonder if that's coming to some of our local school districts. For example, I've always thought that Edmonds was a terrific school district in many ways, but their school board and their superintendent, I mean, they have been taken over by the far, far left mentality. And I got an email from a listener this morning, and it just reflected what I know to be true now of these school districts that are allowing their social view to completely take down and undermine education in our state. So here's the email I got from a frustrated listener. Dory, we recently enrolled our daughter into the elementary summer school program in the Edmonds School District. We thought it would be a great opportunity to catch up on some of the core curriculum, such as math and reading, where she's fallen so far behind. Hopefully, with 19 extra days of school, she would be at grade level by this coming fall. However, less than 12 hours into the summer program, my daughter came home confused. "Dad, can you explain how boys can be girls and girls can be boys?" she asked. "What?" It turns out that on day 3 of summer school, Edmonds thought that gender identification and inclusiveness should be taught as a priority over the core subjects that placed the kids into this program to begin with. I've reached out to the school district to determine what their actual curriculum is for the remaining 16 or so days. They never actually provided us with our teacher's name nor give a warning about this consent, as is done during a normal school year. I'll forward on the response if I even receive one. Anyways, just venting. Keep fighting the fight for us. And I don't blame the dad for being upset. If you are a good, conscientious parent, and you've seen what the remote learning has done, how it has stunted our kids' educational growth over the last year and a half, and here's good parents who said, okay, our daughter's fallen behind grade level, math, reading, so we'll put her in summer school. We'll get her caught up. Well, I know it's not fun to go to summer school, but we'll get her caught up. And then they find out that they are spending a chunk of their summer school curriculum talking not about math and reading, but about gender identity. And it just shows you how our educators have lost their way. But it proves once again that we as parents and as taxpayers and as members of the community, we have to stand against this. There are some good people who are responding to the clarion call. I know some good people who are running for school board positions around the Puget Sound area who are determined to get back our schools from the radical agenda that's being foisted upon our kids. We will keep you posted. We'll check the news for you here at the top of the hour, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.